from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll take a look at the Arts Council's Art and Soul Celebration at the Arts Garden.
I'll find out about an exhibition and conversation at the Stutz about art interpreting violence.
And I get to take a swing at a book fair that's all about baseball. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What do we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Arts Council of Indianapolis is partnering with the Asante Children's Theater, Freetown Village, Latino Youth Collective, Madam Walker Theater Center, and Honorary Chair Amos Brown to present Art and Soul 2015, a celebration of African-American art and artists in Indiana, at the Indianapolis Arts Garden. Since its inception in 1996, Art and Soul has become an annual tradition celebrating Black History Month. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Arts Council's Vice President Shannon Linker and Art and Soul featured artist Kasim Norris about what's going on this month.
Shannon, Kasim, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you're here. And I know we're kind of in the middle of February, so we've missed a little bit of some of the events for Art and Soul, including the big kickoff. But there's still a lot going on the rest of February at the Arts Garden as part of the Arts Council's Art and Soul event. And I want to make people aware that it continues on. And Shannon, let's start with just a little bit about Art and Soul. It's been going on since 96 that the Arts Council has been putting this on. Is that right?
That's right. This is our 19th year of
That's so cool.
Art and Soul. It is, yeah. And, you know, we have people that look forward to it every year. And an exciting thing about this year is that we have added so many different components that are totally new that made the kickoff event at the beginning of the month really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things is we took on partners. So it's not just...
You have a lot of partners.
We do, yeah. Yes. It's mm-hmm. not just the Arts Council. It's not the Arts Council saying, here's this programming at the Arts Garden, which we do all year anyway. Mm-hmm. This time, we really made it a community effort. So we had Asante Children's Theater, we had Freetown Village, we had Latino Youth Collective, and Madam Walker Theater Center as really our partners where we met with them every, you know, monthly, the entire year to come
up really
with this
great
programming. Yeah, so they
nice.
Took ownership of it, and mm-hmm. it was that it made it just all the better.
That's excellent. And of course, you had the big kickoff, and but now there continue to be free events going on throughout the month. I want to mention some of those. We're airing this both on Thursday night and Saturday morning, but on Friday afternoon, Friday the 13th, North Soul Capoeira, it's Afro-Brazilian dance, and that's one of the last dance pieces of the series, right?
Right. This Saturday there's about a dance, but then that would be the last of the dance.
Okay. And again, these are all at the Arts Garden and are all free, which is really cool. Tell me a bit about some of the other performances through the rest of the schedule here.
Well, so what we've done, another thing that's different this year, is we've kind of broken it into segments. So we mm-hmm. had poetry and spoken word performances in the beginning of the month, and then we had the dance performances, and then for the remainder of the month, we'll have music.
I see. Okay.
And so that kind of gives each of our partners an area to focus on. And so they really work to find the best musicians that made the most sense for our theme, which is also a new thing this year, the African diaspora. Everything was kind of around central theme. And so that's why we worked with lots of different regions as well. It wasn't mm-hmm. just about, you know, African-American art and artists in Indiana. Mm-hmm. It's about the influence of Asian and, you know, the Brazilian aspects and Latino and all of that adding into it, which made it even more richer in the influence of African artists on all of those cultures. So, but with the music, Friday, February the 20th, we have Zach Knight. And if you are a blues fan, mm-hmm. you may have heard of Zach Knight. He has toured and opened for Joe Bonamassa and some really big names in blues right now.
Okay.
But in Indianapolis, his hometown doesn't really know very much about him. So it's really exciting that we get to introduce someone who's already had a pretty high level of success nationally.
Yeah.
We get to introduce him to his hometown and get some recognition at home.
That's very
so
cool.
So that'll be a great show. He'll be doing acoustic, but you can see him playing all over the place with the full band. Also, on Saturday, the 21st, Sweet Poison Victim. They're a new addition to Art and Soul. They've never played with us before, and that is going to be a really interesting
And they're sort of Afrobeat type
yeah,
of... Yeah,
yeah. There's a huge amount of diversity in this group. They're coming from influences from all over the world, so it should be really interesting.
And then I see you have one of my favorites, Rob Dixon. Always
That's
love
right.
Rob's
Absolutely.
Great saxophone jazz. You'll see him a lot, of course, at the Jazz Kitchen, the Chatterbox. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be there on Wednesday, the 25th, at 12:15.
Right.
And again, that is free as well. All the concerts are free. You guys have some great sponsors that help out with this, of course, to make these free.
Right, absolutely. Well, the Lilly Endowment is responsible for making Art and Soul happen for all of these 19 years. So we have them to thank for allowing us to pull these people together and pay all of these artists to do this amazing work.
That's great. Now, one of the artists that is featured throughout the month is here with us right now, which is awesome. Kasim, really great to meet you, and I really enjoyed before we went on the air hearing about your work. You're a visual artist, you're a filmmaker, composer, also you're one of the Beckman Fellow for the Arts Council
yeah.
for 2015, which is
yeah.
which is really cool. Let's start with that. What the Beckman Fellowship is, a special fellowship that the Arts Council does for emerging artists. Tell me a little bit about what that means to you and how you got involved with that.
Well, for me, just as an artist, I mean, it's everything for me. Like I told you earlier before we went on air, like I tried for like 3 consecutive years, you know, and it was just one of those things where I was like, you know what, this is something that I can look forward to every year. You know, I think being in Indianapolis, sometimes it can be a bit discouraging just as an artist. You know, you want to know, you want to find out, you want information on where can I get my work at? How mm-hmm. can I get my work out? And, you know, being a Beckman Fellow really allows you to just, it's almost like just one thing you can do where you can, it's like, you know, for that year, like your work is going to get out everywhere in the most important places in Indianapolis. So if you can just focus just on that one thing at the end of the year, if you can work hard, create something, come up with some kind of a plan and apply. And if you can get it, if you're one of those few artists to get that, it's such an amazing experience. And I've just begun.
That's
and
so, cool.
so much has happened for me in just these past few months. I've had more things happen for me in the past few months than I've had in the entire time of being here, just and I'm speaking in terms of mm-hmm. in Indianapolis. You know?
I mean, Shannon, that's kind of like what the whole Beckman Fellowship is. I mean, you're you look
a little weepy.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what the point of it is, right? I mean, for the Arts
Absolutely.
Council to really take on these emerging artists, promote them, connect them. I mean,
yeah.
that's exactly right.
That's exactly
yeah.
what we want to happen and and what we love to hear. Yeah, I mean that you're at when you're at that critical point of being an emerging artist, and it is difficult and it is hard to keep going. You could change your path.
Yeah.
It's probably easier to change your path, but we want to catch the artists that have such incredible potential and say, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to give you some help and we're going to do everything we can to make sure you stay on your current path and continue to be an artist, because it's really important.
And so it's a combination of funds and promotion and assistance and named after Bob Beckman.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
He was a great art supporter, philanthropist in town, and
Absolutely.
Great guy. Yeah. So Kasim, tell me about a bit about the piece that you have that is installed now at the Arts Garden. It's
okay.
It's a video piece,
right.
a short video piece, and
right.
it's a silent piece. Tell me a little bit more.
Yes, it's a short film, and I actually created it. It's the piece that I actually used to apply for the Beckman Fellowship. So I already knew what I was going to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a piece, it's following a young man who's having trouble dealing with his family's ignorance. And it traces all the way back through his bloodline, all the way back into the 30s
mm-hmm.
with his great-great-grandfather. And so he has these memories and these images of his father teaching him to hang black men. And it's not just about being black or being white. I really wanted to create a piece that challenges people to not forget. And I think that's something that's not just important to me and not just important for other minorities or other races. I think it's just important for just being a human. Sometimes I think we get caught up in our everyday lives. We see things on the news. We see things that happen overseas or in other countries, and we just look at it, and then we have this small 10-second window of concern, and then we just walk out, mm-hmm. and we forget about these things that are happening in the world. And so I just wanted to create something to challenge people just not to forget, you know. And so when I created it, I put it online, and, you know, I had a lot of trouble. I had a lot of negative feedback, a lot of positive feedback from people. But it's great because it did what it was supposed to do, which is allow people to remember, you know, these hard to deal with topics, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what I want to do as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, as an artist, is I just want to and elicit an emotion and allow people to be able to get into one room and to be able to just have a simple conversation about a simple topic that's probably the most difficult thing to talk about.
You know, I mean, that's quite a challenge you've taken on there, to deal with issues like that in a short film. I think what's also really kind of fascinating is that, you know, because you've been chosen to show it in the Arts Garden,
right.
you know, and people are sort of walking by and, you know, you want to be able to, you know, have them stop and pay attention for a few minutes. But at the same time, you know, it's not something where, you know, you can show a big movie with, you know, sound and all that
right.
stuff. You know, we were talking before you went on, you know, your sort of fascination with a deaf filmmaker you became familiar with
right.
and really challenging yourself
right.
to not use sound
right.
in this
Correct.
Film
Correct.
So that it could work in that Arts Garden environment. I mean, that's kind of a big challenge, too. So
yes.
you're really visually focused.
Yes. It is. And like I said, that's something I just kind of stumbled upon, because I'm always studying and I'm always trying mm-hmm. to meet new artists. That's another great thing about being a Beckman Fellow, is getting a chance to meet so many other amazing artists in the city. Because as a filmmaker, as a
yeah.
visual artist, I can't create without working with other artists. And I think a lot of times, even with being a musician, even with being a painter or a sculptor, you have to collaborate one way or the other with other artists and with other people. And so I think just something I just want to just tell other artists in the city, you know, you have to get out there. You have to be able to socialize with other artists
mm-hmm.
as well. Because I think a lot of times
hear other voices. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Artists, we're so different. You know, a lot of the times we just want to just lock ourselves in a room and just create these pieces. And we just think they're magically just going to get out. But you have to get out. You have to get out if you want your art to get out. You have to do the work. You have to do the legwork. And so being a Beckman Fellow, being a featured artist,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the Art and Soul event, to me, it's one of the most amazing things. Because like I told you earlier, you know, it's, I think every artist dreams of having their work in some kind of sterile environment or in some museum or mm-hmm. exhibition. But the Art and Soul event kind of like just puts, like kind of just turns that idea upside down. And it's, you know, they take it out and say, hey, we're going to put your work in a public facility. You know, and that to me is the most awesome. That's the greatest thing ever. And especially because it's free.
Yeah.
You know, which gives people no excuse
yeah.
not to come.
Exactly.
You know, because my family's like, I'm like, yo, you have to go check out my piece, or you have to mm-hmm. go. And it's like, where it's at and how much does it cost? I'm like, mm-hmm. well, the first thing is it's free.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is it's in a mall. And they're like, wow, I was going to the mall anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the other great thing about it. You know, it's right smack down in the middle of the mall. So I think that that's awesome.
Shannon, you've got a pretty awesome spokesperson right here.
I know. I'm just taking notes. We'll use some of this later.
So, Shannon, I do want to ask you, there's other artists that are being shown as well, right, throughout the month. And if you want to briefly just talk about that.
Yeah, definitely. So we took we always have a visual artist as a component of Art and Soul, but this time we did a group show, a juried group show
mm-hmm.
with the same African diaspora theme. And we have 14 artists, and I have to say it's one of the strongest shows I've seen in the Arts Garden in a really long time. There's a lot of really excellent pieces with Kassem's and 13 others. We had a Best in Show, second place and third place, and William Rasdell, who most people know mm-hmm. as a kind of a staple artist in town, won the Best in Show award.
Nice. He's a great photographer.
He mm-hmm. is amazing. And so what happens, another new element of this year, we're going to take that winning, that Best in Show piece by William, and bring it over to Gallery 924 this summer and build...
That's the Arts Council's gallery at 924 Pennsylvania.
Right.
924 Pennsylvania.
So we're going to build a summer group show around that piece.
Cool.
Some element. I don't know what yet. Mm-hmm. I have to think about that and
sure.
figure it out. But some element of that will create a whole show of a whole new list of artists. So
excellent.
Making it live on
so
a little
it continues
bit more.
On.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing I do want to ask you about before we wrap this up, the closing celebration for the event, Sunday, March 1st, 3:15 at the Arts Garden. I know that's a pretty special day to sort mm-hmm. of wrap up the Art and Soul. But as you said, it continues on in many ways throughout the year. But tell okay. me a bit more about that.
Well, the closing ceremony will be more of a ceremony. There will be a performance, but mostly it will be us kind of celebrating the month we've had and all mm-hmm. the artists, and City Council Councilor President Maggie Lewis will be there to kind of just acknowledge that this is happening and show appreciation for the arts in the city. One of the things that's kind of interesting, I think, this year, we've given away DNA test kits. Again, with
yeah,
that theme
I saw
of
a mention
the
of that.
Diaspora.
I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So at the opening, we gave away two, just a random drawing. And so for the closing, we're going to give away two more. And those will come from, we've had a Power to Give, which is mm-hmm. our crowdsource funding online resource for the arts.
Right.
We have 15 organizations in town that are doing Power to Give promotions for that will, you know, projects that will last all year long. And so if you give to one of those projects, you'll be in the hat for getting one of these DNA kits.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so we're kind
nice.
Of pulling it all together with huh. all these different elements and the DNA test kits. I think all the featured artists got
yeah.
those too, right?
Yeah.
So all of our featured artists at the closing will hopefully get the results of that and be
wow.
able
yeah.
to tell Kassem where
yeah.
where his lineage comes
yeah.
from.
Yeah.
And so I think
that's a great
adding,
way to connect to the idea of the diaspora.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow,
yeah,
that's really
cool.
And
adding just a level of education and information that in the past it's mostly been about let's enjoy these artists and this music and this dance and all of that. But this year I think we stepped it up a notch and
yeah.
adding that level of education and information that's really important to the community.
Awesome.
I'm happy to be a Beckman Fellow this year. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm glad I got it this year and not last year, because there's so much awesomeness that's happening right now. I'm just so excited to be a part of it.
Well, that is cool. I'm really the work both of you are doing is awesome. I do want to mention, of course, that there's also a lot of other great events going on during the month of February as part of Black History Month, taking place at Madam Walker Theater, at Clues, the Meet the Artist show at the library, lots of other stuff. And you can find more information, of course, on all of those, as well as all the free events at the Arts Garden and at the Arts Council's website. Want to thank you both for coming in today. Great to chat with you both. And thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with the Arts Council's Vice President Shannon Linker and Art and Soul featured artist Kassem Norris. You can get the complete schedule of Art and Soul events at the Arts Garden at indiearts.org/art-soul. Once again, indiearts.org/art-soul. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Cold, Dark, Unsecurity. It's the title of a new exhibition at the Raymond James Stutz Art Gallery, in which artists have used video, audio, photography, sculpture, and paint to explore the effects of many kinds of violence in our community. The exhibit is open through the month of February, and a special partnership with the 10-Point Coalition collects donations for that organization's anti-violence campaigns. Sharon Gamble invited gallery co-directors Lee Dunnington-Jones and Martha Vaught to tell us more.
I want to take you back to before this exhibition opened. Where did the idea of cold, dark, unsecurity actually start?
Actually, the artists sat down together. I had a meeting of all of us that were participating, and we sat around and batted around titles and came up with this one, which I think depicts what we want to say really, really well. It's a little bit vague, but also specific. Cold, dark, insecurity creates a sort of a graphic feeling of desperation.
And
it's insecurity, not insecurity.
Right, insecurity. So. How do you see the difference between those two concepts?
Insecurity is just seems a little stronger to me and did to all of us at the time we were coming up with the title. If you are insecure, you have no protection, no walls. Mm. Insecure is something a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think of insecure as being more of an internal thing, and insecure means you're in an environment where you're just
a dangerous place.
In a dangerous place. And I remember that Lee started discussing this when we took over as co-directors in July. Because there was so much emphasis about all the gang deaths, all the violence in Indianapolis and the homicide rate. And as we talked about it and as she thought about it, she said, well, I don't really feel like I can address gang violence per se because it's not really, we're kind of bystanders on that. That's not something we deal with every day. So we made it broader, and she made it broader in theme to just address violence in general and how it, the multiple ways it impacts people's lives through the interpretations of the various artists, because there's quite a different approach each individual in the show has taken.
And it's been amazing. Each time a new piece is finished or finished enough for me to know what it's going to look like, some topical news program comes up. The thing that comes to mind most readily is we have a portrait of children by John Ross that is his three children, and they have big guns.
That one I find so chilling.
They
look like
disturbing.
They're walking to the bus stop, and they look normal in every other way. They got the backpacks, they got the sneaks, they got, you know, they're
and
dressed.
They're packing Uzis.
And they look happy.
And Rye, and then last, I believe it was November, the story came out of the young girl, the 9-year-old, who was at the shooting range with whatever adults, I don't know if it was her parents or not, and she shot her instructor. Somebody handed her one of these big guns, and she shot it, and it was the impact was so great that she was kicked back, and she killed the instructor.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, and the eerie thing about John's painting is he's down the hall from my studio, and we visit from time to time. He did that right after Newtown. And,
ooh.
You know, you just... That's his family, and I know how he loves his children, but what's going on in his mind altogether, I'm not certain.
I'm not either, but the piece is chilling.
It is. So I'm curious, I know you can't answer for other artists in the show, but as you're getting ready to step into the studio to make work, do you respond the same way regardless of what the theme of an upcoming show is? Or in the case of this one, you're making art that may be beautiful, but it has this darkness to it. Is there a kind of a political mantle you don as you're going into the studio? Or how do you emotionally, psychologically prepare yourself to make art for a theme like this?
I have put on a political mantle, and I've curated several shows that have had a political theme, and I really wanted the Stutz to do an exhibit this year while Martha and I were in power as the gallery directors, that was art about art speaking, and not art for sale, because there's very little chance that any of this will sell. I mean, there's always the possibility,
sure.
But the purpose of this art is to speak. And so when I started on my piece, yes, I donned a special mantle to do what I wanted to do, to mm-hmm. show what I wanted to show.
Mm-hmm. Martha, how did you prepare?
My work often addresses darker aspects of human condition, and I am a partisan person politically, but I want to make art that reflects the time and place that I'm in
mm-hmm.
in Indiana and as a lifelong Hoosier, understanding that violence and cruelty in the human heart has a very long provenance, you know, back to the beginning. And I think we're very ambivalent about violence and how it can be used and if it should be used. And as I was gathering my thoughts over the weekend, I thought, you know, our misadventure with Gitmo and torture and the Newtown's shooting and how in some ways that's changed the zeitgeist, which is a terrible word, of the time. You know, you use violence in war, and we think that sometimes that's a positive thing. But to get back to the more specific, I use horses as a symbol in my artwork quite a bit. And one of the larger pieces depicts an act of cruelty towards horses. A lot of people think I use horses simply because I like horses. Well, I do, in fact, like horses. But they're a powerful metaphor in the Bible. They represent war and wealth. Even today, they represent wealth. They represent strength. They represent uncontrolled. And in our Western myth or idea about ourselves as Americans, you know, the image of the cowboy and the wild horse, well, the wild horses aren't native, and the cowboys are hired hands. So whatever political background or ideological background we come from, we're in this stew together. And I can't say that I have the total answer to any of these things.
Is the idea to get people talking to make people think?
The idea is to get people talking and make people think. The variety of violence, and this has worked out so well for us, we have found people in our group that have had experiences with violence much more personal than I thought when we began. And so the variety of violence depicted is violence that happens every day under our noses. And so to raise awareness that this is happening, it's not just overseas, it's not just war.
On the TV news.
It's not just those other guys in that neighborhood. It's everywhere. And that there is a culture of violence that we each are responsible for. And so I want people to walk away with that thought, that there is a culture of violence and I have a part in it.
Yes, one of the other pieces that I have directly addresses the tension between calling ourselves a Christian nation and then still thinking that gun ownership and excessive availability of guns, you know, to me they're two irreconcilable points of view. And I think in terms like the horse is man's servant, and soldiers are like horses in that they're obedient and they're brave and they're in fine condition, but they can be abused and they can be sent into situations that damage them. And like a horse can be damaged if they have a traumatic enough experience, they don't always get over it. And, you know.
Actually, that's what my piece is about, is the war that comes home and the violence that occurs because there are very few of our veterans who are being treated for PTSD and other conditions that cause them all kinds of problems with their families and friends when they get home. Mm-hmm. I mean, the rates of suicide and domestic violence among those young men is appalling. So, I mean, that's what my piece is about, the violence of the war, and the war comes home.
The war touched me personally. My brother served in the Vietnam War and came back very damaged as a result. And I have a diptych that's going to be in the show, painted oil on paper. And in one panel, a doghouse is burning. Well, dog is the opposite of God, you know, if you put it in the mirror. The doghouse was built for me by my brother. And we brought it to our farm after I got married. You know, my parents wanted it moved, so I brought it to the farm. And eventually my husband says he just had it, so we set it on fire. And it was such a striking image at burning, I ran out and got the camera and took a number of pictures of it. Now, I've used the image over the years. My brother died when I was 19 as a direct result of his war experiences. And, you know, he was a Marine. He fought bravely. He fought bloodily. He talked quite graphically about the experiences that he had. And my husband and I often remark that there was enough time between Vietnam and when we got involved in this long, drug-out affair in Afghanistan and Iraq that people had forgotten the personal toll. And so few people serve today as soldiers that I don't think it's easy for us to kind of put them on a pedestal and sort of in a way worship them without really understanding what they go through. And there's so many multiple tours of duty with these, and they're very professional, they're well-trained, they're pretty well-equipped, but they're still the cavalier, they're still our knights in shining armor that do our bidding. And it's the responsibility enough for us not to put them in places they shouldn't be.
You've had a wonderful development relative to a closing event and trying to prevent violence in Indianapolis. Let's hear about that.
Oh, I'm so excited about this. We've partnered with the 10-Point Coalition, and it took me a while to get this all put together because I was having a hard time getting communication with them. So all kinds of little feelers went out, and I finally got them. Anyway, we're going to extend our exhibit is going to run the whole month, but we're going to have this time a closing reception. Our opening reception was with Jeffrey McCall, who's a columnist with the Star, and he speaks on the culture of violence, which we want to address. Our closing reception will be Reverend Harrison from the 10-Point Coalition speaking on just those issues that I was talking about, that we live in a culture of violence and that we each have a responsibility. He says that violence is learned and can be unlearned, and we each need to take responsibility for our little piece of that. So I could pop. I'm so excited. We're going to be collecting donations for the 10-Point Coalition. They need money for several projects that they're working on. We were going to offer them a percentage of our sales, but quickly realized that we probably weren't going to sell anything out of this exhibit.
Although there should be some courageous buyers in Indianapolis.
So maybe we will, and we'll give them a percentage too. But we're going to be collecting donations for the entire month from when we opened the reception, the opening reception to the closing reception. So that was really neat. It just felt like a thing that should happen, a thing that was supposed to be.
Fate.
Kismet.
Sharon Gamble with Raymond James, Stutz Arts Gallery co-directors Lee Dunnington-Jones and Martha Vaught. You can see Cold, Dark, Unsecurity at the gallery in the Stutz building throughout the month, and attend a closing party on Friday, February 27th from 5 to 9. At the closing event, the 10-Point Coalition's Reverend Charles Harrison will speak, and you can learn more at stutzartist.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I have multiple things that people can celebrate this weekend beyond the obvious Valentine's Day.
Okay.
For example, this Friday is Friday the 13th.
Yes,
so you can
watch
for Black Cats.
Frightening right before Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Anyway.
Don't break any mirrors. But also, this Friday is World Radio Day.
How cool is that?
And our listeners are celebrating by listening to that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
What do you have?
Well, you know, there's a lot of great events going on for Black History Month. We were talking about the Art and Soul events down at the Arts Garden earlier, but I do also want to mention some really cool stuff at Madam Walker Theater, Throwback Thursday Cinema with The Blacklist, as well as Jazz on the Avenue coming up in about a week or so. Check out thewalkertheater.org for more information on all of that, but some really cool stuff. And then also the Philharmonic Orchestra of Indianapolis 17th Annual Gospel Concert is going to be at Pike Performing Arts Center on February 22nd at 3 p.m., and that'll be a great concert as well for Black History Month.
Fabulous. Hey, the Ronan Chamber Ensemble is presenting an African-American composer's Focus concert that's free this coming Monday night, the 16th, at the Crystal DeHaan Center at the University of Indianapolis at 7:30. It's called Inspiring Heritage, and it features two pieces by Indianapolis-born David Baker, and as they say, many, many more pieces. So that's 7:30 Monday night at the DeHaan Center at the U of I Women Chamber Ensemble.
For all you ballet dancers out there, there's still a little bit of time to register for a masterclass with Paul Booz. Who is Paul Booz? Well, he danced with the American Ballet Theater and the School of American Ballet and worked with Balanchine and Jerome Robbins. And he is going to be at the Indianapolis School of Ballet's studios on Capitol Avenue on Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. And participants who have had at least 6 years of formal ballet training, ladies will be on point, can take a master class with them, and then you can also be an observer if you just want to come and watch as well. You can get more information at indieballet.org.
And if you prefer to watch ballet, the Butler Ballet's Midwinter Dance Festival is going on through this weekend. The centerpiece is Gerald Arpino's Viva Vivaldi. All sorts of events going on at the Schrott Center for the Arts on the Butler University campus.
Very cool. Hey, for you young artists out there, specifically in fourth and fifth grade, there is a really cool art competition called Save the Monarchs, as in Monarch Butterfly, combining art and science to create 3D monarch butterflies from recycled materials, and this is all part of Earth Charter Indiana. You can get more information on their website, earthcharterindiana.org, to find out how to submit. You've got until April 1st, no fooling, to get your submissions in, and this is a really cool project and program through Earth Charter Indiana.
Fantastic. Encore Vocal Arts taking on Mozart's Requiem on February 21st with a pre-party at 7 o'clock and an after-party. And the audience is invited to wear a mask and dress in black. More about that next week.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm. Well, Sharon, you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or just listen to us next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Travis DiNicola was pretty excited when he heard about this upcoming event that featured two of his favorite things, books and baseball. That's right, the Baseball Book Festival, I'm not making this up, is taking place at the Rathskeller in downtown Indy. Travis invited event organizer Jeff Stanger in to find out more.
Jeff, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You are very welcome. This is very fun. I got to tell you, it's two of my favorite things, baseball and books. So when I heard about a Baseball Book Festival, I'm like, sign me up. Tell me more. How did this come about? How did you decide to do this?
Well, the idea came from about 5 years ago. We actually did this event in Indianapolis on the Butler campus in 2010.
Okay.
And the charity that we were raising money for is the same, Play Ball Indiana, and their RBI program, which is reviving baseball in inner cities. The idea came about, and someone who knew someone who knew someone, if you will, knew Carl Erskine.
Yeah.
The Dodger great who wrote the fantastic book, What I Learned from Jackie Robinson. And so we made a connection. Carl agreed to do it. We scrambled.
He lives in Indiana.
Lives up in Anderson, so not far away.
Yep.
And we got Pete DePremio from the Fort Wayne newspaper, who wrote a really interesting book about Indiana college baseball.
Okay.
And Dan O'Brien, who did a great play, a screenplay, if you will, for on the life of Rube Waddell, who is one of those interesting characters in the history of baseball. But, most people, you know Babe Ruth and Mantle and Maris and all these names come out. And Rube Waddell led a very interesting character kind of life. And so he was there. I was there on the panel as well. I felt guilty being on that panel with some of the people that were up there. But it was a lot of fun.
Some heavy hitters, so to speak.
They were. And I tell you, Carl Erskine had everybody spellbound.
He's really cool. I've heard him speak once and just fantastic guy.
He is.
So obviously it was successful and you wanted to do it again.
It was. It probably wasn't the success we hoped for. Mm-hmm. We made the mistake of having the event on the same weekend of the Big Ten basketball tournament, which was in town. And that kind of hurt our attendance. distance a little bit. But it was something that we always wanted to revisit. And Playball approached me this past year and mm-hmm. said, we'd like to get you back involved. I was on the board at one time. And how could we do that? And I said, well, I want to revisit that event.
Yeah.
And I want to get authors involved in the planning of the event. So we got Pete Cava, a local guy who's written an amazing book about the Chicago Cubs and has been around in media, print, digital, whatever, radio, TV, for a veteran of all of those mediums for so many years. So he's a great guy to have around and to advise. But I said I wanted to come back and do this event again and commit to growing it, you know, starting it out again and growing it. And they said, yeah, sure, let's try it again.
So it's a combination of both a book fair where people can buy books, but also you've got panel discussions and author talks and again, all around baseball.
Absolutely. So it's a great day of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you're getting to interact with these authors, and then you're getting to hear the stories behind the stories, you know, what motivated you to write that book or do that research. And those are some of the best stories. And I was talking to someone the other day that said, boy, that just has to be fantastic. I'm sure the statistics and the comparisons, you know, come flying out. And sure, there is that, but there's mm-hmm. also a great camaraderie. I know that since I personally have been involved in this, you know, everybody kind of shares, hey, what project are you working on now
sure.
as we're going through this and what's coming out? And a project that I had kind of abandoned about a Hoosier-based baseball player, I had, you know, folks saying, you got to go do that.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to revisit that. You can't give up on that. So for myself, I'm just finishing up another work of fiction centered on baseball. But
well, and you've got, what, two books published that are novels about baseball?
Absolutely. Yeah. So mm-hmm. We've got a lot of nonfiction there, but I'm mm-hmm. representing the fiction side of things. And my first book was set in Bloomington, Indiana. It's about the town of Bloomington trying to buy the Dodgers and
yeah.
move them to the Midwest.
Love that story.
And just a lot of fun doing that book. But I have a new series coming out that is basically, if you think about historical artifacts that are stolen, that people kill for, steal for,
mm-hmm.
all of those kinds of things. It's the Quick Baseball Mystery series. And quick because they're a fairly quick read, but also quick because it's the main character. And he's solving mysteries related to baseball artifacts.
So
it's
going to
be really fun. But the story that...
So like you know, I'm trying to think of you know, like the ball that Mookie Wilson hit or something in the...
Exactly.
Or, I mean, that's that sort of thing, like famous, you know, or the plate that was stolen, you know, the home plate that was stolen by Jackie Robinson or something like that. I don't know.
Absolutely. Well, I'll give you the artifact for this first book.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth spent part of one season as a base coach for the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know that. At the very tail end of his career, he was hoping to get on a full-time manager's position when he realized that they were just kind of using him to put rear ends
mm-hmm,
in the seats,
sure.
if you will. He figured that out and quit. But this is centered around Babe Ruth's Dodgers jersey.
Oh, that's
you know?
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
So what happened to that? And so a lot of fun. If I could sum it up for you easily, if you took Grumpy Old Men, Bull Durham,
mm-hmm.
and Ocean's 11, you spun them up in a blender, that's what this book is.
That sounds like a hoot.
It's going to be fun.
That sounds awesome.
It's going to be fun. But like I said, as I was talking to these other folks about
yeah.
other projects, they said, this Bert Shepard, that's the name of the guy. He's
mm-hmm.
a Hoosier-based, or a native Hoosier, who, amazing story. This man was shot down in World War II flying a mission. It was his 38th. He had flown 37 successful missions, shot down on number 38. Lost a leg, managed to pitch later on with a prosthetic leg, made it all the way to the
wow.
majors, spent about 9 years in the minors. And then from there went on to do amazing things outside of sports. Motivational speeches for people with you know, prosthetic limbs. He helped design better and more comfortable prosthetics for people. And just an amazing guy.
That's the thing. There's so many great stories in baseball.
There are.
Which is why, I mean, books and baseball go together so well.
Absolutely.
You know? And I was thinking, I mean, I've got a whole shelf at home of just baseball books, baseball history, baseball stories, some baseball novels, you know, and, you know, I'm a fan of other sports too, but I don't know, there's something about baseball that just lends itself to good writing.
Well, I think what it is one of those key elements in great stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about archetypes and things of that nature, but in any adventure, whether it's the hero adventure or the buddy adventure or the stories of redemption, what are we always trying to do? We're trying to get back home.
Yeah.
And in baseball, we're trying to get back home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something that resonates there. And I think there's something within the pace of the game that where we have stretches of very slow movement and then stretches of incredible speed and whatnot. I think that mirrors our life so much more than a lot of other things.
Yeah. So tell me, give me a rundown of who some of the authors are who are going to be there that day.
Sure. Well, our keynote speaker, Chris Lamb, is fantastic. IU professor. And he is going to be, he's written a couple of books, but what I'm really excited about what he's going to be talking about is the Cannon Street All-Stars from the YMCA. This is a 50th anniversary of this story. Excuse me, the 60th, 1955. And this is, if you will, this is the Little League team that broke the color barrier. They are the Jackie Robinsons of Little League baseball,
if you will. Yeah.
And he's going to be speaking on that topic and kind of the behind the scenes of that. And so we're really excited about that. Pete Cava, I mentioned before, he has a new book coming out this year, kind of an encyclopedia of all the Indiana players who have made it to the majors. And so, but his first book, Tales from the Cubs Dugout, was just a hoot. So he's going to be fun to listen to. And then I'm really excited, Doug Wilson, who he has written, he wrote the biography of Mark Fidrich, who was one of those great characters of the 70s, very eccentric, used to talk to the ball when he was out on the mound. And then he wrote the biography of Brooks Robinson, who go talk to anyone and they will tell you the nicest guy to ever play the game was Brooks Robinson. So you've got this eccentric guy and then you've got the nicest guy. And then right in between that, he's got a new book coming out about Carlton Fisk. And so Doug's going to have some really good stories. He really is to share with the audience.
Now, you've got Reed Duffy moderating a panel, right?
Yes. Reed attended the original, the one back in 2010, as a fan. Showed up, had a great time, enjoyed it, talked baseball with everyone there.
I mean, a lot of us, of course, know Reed more for his food writing and stuff, but
absolutely,
you know, great writer, great guy, and a baseball fan. So
absolutely, great passion for baseball, and when we extend the offer for him to be our moderator, he just jumped at the chance.
That's very cool. That's very fun. So, I mean, it sounds like it's just going to be a great day. And, you know, we're recording this and pitchers and catchers are about to report pretty soon. But when the actual event takes place on February 28th, spring training will have started. So, you know, I mean, it's a perfect time of year to do this, I think, because people are getting excited about baseball. And this will just be a lot of fun. People can buy tickets ahead of time or at the door. Is that right? Because there is an entry fee.
Absolutely. It's $15. And the funds go to Play Ball Indiana, to 100% of the funds, to the RBI program. So we're supporting baseball opportunities for kids in the inner cities. You can get those online at baseballbookfestival.org.
Okay.
baseballbookfestival.org. And I encourage you to get them in advance if you can. But, yes, you can get them at the door as well.
Very good. Very good. Yes. So I got to ask you, what's your favorite baseball book?
My favorite baseball book would still probably have to be Shoeless Joe.
Yeah. It's a great story. Yeah, a great story.
One of the best books and one of the best movies. Now, if you go nonfiction, might be a little bit of a surprise. I know there are a lot of great autobiographies and histories, but Moneyball by Michael Lewis is still one of my favorites.
It's a fantastic book.
My day job is in the nonprofit world, and I recommend that book to nonprofit professionals quite a bit because the concept of being a small market team and trying to compete with the big boys and finding those ways to do that translates to the nonprofit world in so many ways. So I was actually speaking at an event last week, and I actually used Moneyball as the theme. I was speaking to a large nonprofit audience, a fundraiser audience, and I used Moneyball as the theme, and I actually give baseballs out as my business card.
Oh, that's great. Well, Moneyball's a great book. I read that, and you know, some people may get turned off because they think, oh, it's going to be all just about stats and numbers, but there's so much more of a story behind it.
Absolutely.
But I mean, that's what, again, makes any good baseball book worth reading. So, very cool. Well, this is going to be a great festival. Again, the Baseball Book Festival. Jeff, I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And thanks for putting that on. You want to add one more thing before we wrap this up?
Yeah, one more thing. If you can't make it to this event, we've got something for you. And that's called the Virtual Baseball Book Festival. It's the same cost, $15. Mm-hmm. And what you get is a one-year subscription access to free downloads from the website from all of these great authors, not just the ones who are there during that day, but other authors who are contributing to this who couldn't make the trip. So you'll get free chapters, you'll get ebooks, unpublished short stories from all these great baseball authors to be able to download anytime over the course of a year.
Excellent. Very good. Jeff, awesome to see you, and best of luck with your festival.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Travis DiNicola with Baseball Book Festival organizer Jeff Stanger. The Baseball Book Festival takes place at the Rathskeller in downtown Indy on Saturday, February 28th from 1 to 5 p.m. You can get more information at baseballbookfestival.org. baseballbookfestival.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll talk with the musicians of the Icarus Ensemble about their new CD.
I'll get a preview of the play Almost Maine at the Marion University Theater.
And I'll find out about a new book about the world of Huck Finn. And we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.